Welcome to Groundwire Community Radio News, brought to you by volunteers at Canada's community radio stations.
This episode of Groundwire was produced in part at the annual National Campus and Community Radio Conference held this year in Ottawa on unceded and unsurrendered Algonquin territory.
We're your hosts, Ugona Chibo from CKUW
and Chanel Klein from CJSF. In this episode...
This really sucks. 50 people, regardless of who they were, 50 people were killed. And the fact that they're LGBT mobilizes the LGBT community.
You gotta fight for those small little pieces and parcels of land that are important to our community, that are important to our backyard.
Everybody said, this is unceded Algonquin territory. What does that mean? Even the Prime Minister says that when he comes in. I'm standing on unceded Algonquin territory. What does that mean? It means it belongs to the Algonquins. That's what it means.
But first, here are the headlines.
The Canadian Radio, Television and Telecommunications Commission, the CRTC, released its new policy framework for local and community television on June 15th. The CRTC's decision in the new policy defines community TV programming and shields big broadcast distribution companies such as Rogers and Bell from any consequences for non-compliance with regards to local programming. The policy also eliminates non-profit community television in license zone 7 over 1 million subscribers. These are zones that have larger concentrations of urban indigenous, ethnic, and linguistic minority communities, thus reducing their visibility in and access to community television. At the same time, the policy relieves distribution companies of their mandate to offer production facilities or compensation for independent producers of access content. The newly formed Community Media Advocacy Center was quick to respond to the CRTC policy, claiming that the policy shamefully subsidizes corporate media over guaranteeing Canadians access to community TV programming that is reflective of the local community, including Indigenous, ethnic, and linguistic minorities. In terms of actual funding, the new policy reallocates community television funding in drastic ways that reduce its accessibility to the community. Community TV was previously funded through a mandatory contribution of 2% of revenues from broadcast distribution companies, equivalent to $172 million annually. The CRTC's reallocation in the new policy leaves community TV with guaranteed funding amounting to only $9.5 million, a reduction of 94.5% of the original funding, given that the new policy also limits access expenditure quotas to 50%. Canadians can now expect to share only $4.9 million nationwide to produce all their community TV access programming.
On June 8, 2016, a massive sinkhole formed on Ottawa's busy Rideau Street. We spoke to a University of Ottawa student who expressed her concerns around the issue.
But I think that it was very dangerous and something really bad could have happened. If it had been at the bottom of the base of a building or something, who knows what could have happened.
Fortunately, the sinkhole's only casualty was an illegally parked van. There is speculation that LRT construction on Rideau Street may have caused the sinkhole. Rideau Transit Group was responsible for paying damages in February of 2014 when a sinkhole appeared at Waller Street and Laurier Avenue. Ottawa Mayor Jim Watson says the sinkhole will likely take weeks to fix. That headline came to us from Ugana Chigbo, Saima Assad, and Chanel Klein and was produced at the Campus and Community Radio Conference.
That's it for the headlines. We will be right back after this. Just heard the newly released track by A Tribe Called Red, Stadium Powwow, featuring Black Bear.
Now it's time for our feature stories.
Early last Sunday morning, a lone gunman killed 49 and wounded 53 people in a terror attack on the Pulse nightclub, a popular LGBTQ bar in Orlando, Florida. That same night, thousands of people attended a vigil at Barbara Hall Park in Toronto to remember the victims. Mick Sweetman from CJRU Radio in Toronto spoke with people at the vigil.
Early Sunday morning, a lone gunman killed 49 and wounded 53 people in a terror attack on the Pulse nightclub, a popular gay bar in Orlando, Florida. That same night, thousands of people in Toronto attended a vigil on Church Street to remember the victims. We spoke to some of the people at the rally about why they were there and what it meant for them.
My name is Postulant Joan O'Snark. I'm one of the members of the Toronto House of the Sisters of Joy, part of the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence. My husband and I this morning just heard about the horrible, horrible news in Orlando, and we just looked at each other and said, I think we need to manifest tonight. We need to turn around, hit the street, go out, walk around, be there, be a shoulder to cry on, be there for people to turn around and talk to. So we posted the event, and it just caught on like wildfire, and before we knew it, it wasn't just a casual stroll down Church Street talking to people. It was a full-blown vigil here.
John Macrath is a deacon with the Metropolitan Community Church in Toronto. He was at the vigil holding a sign that read, "We will pray with you."
This really sucks. 50 people, regardless of who they were, 50 people were killed. And the fact that they're LGBT mobilizes the LGBT community, and part of our grief is people of faith is to pray.
After most of the crowd had already cleared, Brenton Brown was still reflecting at the makeshift memorial in Barbara Hall Park.
I went, oh my goodness, that could happen anywhere. That could have been here in Toronto. And you know what, I must say, sometimes that thought has run across my mind that maybe could happen in the gay establishment, because if people are going up because of hatred and hate crimes are going on. What if that ever happened somewhere I was in, going to the gay bars and gay clubs? That's one of my worst fears did come through.
Rebecca McNeil went to the vigil with her friend Maureen LaHaye, who was visiting from France.
Having everyone come out towards the end and just hold hands and be together, I thought that was beautiful. So, I mean, yeah, the community was the best part of it, yeah, and of not, like,
the,
you know.
The singing, the speech of the reverend at the end, they covered all the point. It was not just about LGBTQ. They explained that it was also, and it's important, also about people of color, religion, and stuff like that. So it was... It's great. Usually people don't do that, and for once they did. So that was emotional.
For CGRU 1280, this is Mick Sweetman. I said goodnight to shooting bullets, shooting stars. I said
goodnight to shooting bullets, shooting stars. A sacred walk took place on June 17th in opposition to condo developments taking place on Chaudière Island and Albert Island on unceded Algonquin territory on the Ottawa River, close to Parliament Hill. Brandon Alexander and Matt Cicero bring us an in-depth look at the ongoing opposition to this development project.
The Zibi condominiums are to be built on Albert and Chaudière Islands, adjacent to the Chaudière Falls. The falls are a sacred site for First Nations.
Ottawa is called Ottawa because that's the place where we honored the Creator, because it's a very sacred place. The Chaudière Falls and the Great Kettle, the Whirlpool, and those islands, those sacred islands, are shaped like a sacred pipe. The Creator just created that marvelous work of art that represents our culture, our sacred pipe.
Douglas Cardinal, an Anishinaabe architect best known for designing the Canadian Museum of History and the National Museum of the American Indian, spoke at a panel in Ottawa about the Zibi condominium development. Here he mentions the spiritual and historical significance of the falls. Ottawa and the entire Ottawa River watershed is the unceded territory of the Algonquin Nation. This fact has been key to the opposition to the Zibi condominiums.
Everybody said, this is unceded Algonquin territory. What does that mean? Even the Prime Minister says that when he comes in. I'm standing on unceded Algonquin territory. What does that mean? It means it belongs to the Algonquins. That's what it means. See, it's okay for other people other than Native people to have land, and the government protects their rights and their property and their land. But when you're First Nations, you have no rights. The whole government is there to take and steal your land.
In the fall of 2014, the islands were rezoned for private and commercial development so that the Windmill Development Group could build condominiums there. Douglas Cardinal says that he and others who opposed the construction were ignored.
You say you should not have made this into a multi-use. What right have you, the city of Ottawa, to do this? What right have you to change this from a park to a multi-use so you can build those condos on it? You have no right to do this. They passed it. We don't care. Then we appealed that. They would not let us speak. You know, it's scarred. It's pained. It's abused. It's when I look at the islands that I look at our people. What they did to the islands, they did to us. The pain, they colonized those islands as they colonized us. But, you know, we can decolonize them like we are decolonizing our people. And the elders decolonized me. I'm Anishinaabe. I do not bow my head to anyone except the Creator.
Clive Doucette, a former councillor for the City of Ottawa, says that the issue is that the decision to rezone the islands was not democratic.
It's about the quality of our democracy and the quality of the development approval process. Most media people couldn't make the distinction between a government of the people who is supposed to be there to safeguard public purpose, and the developers are there to make a buck. And, you know, they have to make dollars, they have to make a profit. You can't continue as a developer if you don't make a profit. Should you be having somebody who has that terrific responsibility to make a profit, running a consultation process for an axial piece of land that is really, it's not just important to Ottawa, it's important to the entire country. So, what do we do? Well, what we do is, I think we have to say to Monsieur Trudeau and his friends on Parliament Hill that this is an issue where we want you to take charge. We want to see a Justice Berger type of inquiry and consensus and visioning for that area. But that vision has to come out from an independent, people-driven story, not out of any developer's desire for a development.
If you feel strongly on this issue, find more information at freethefalls.ca. This has been a Groundwire production at the 35th National Campus Community Radio Conference in Ottawa on unceded Algonquin territory, co-produced by Braden Alexander of CKXU and Matt Cicero of CKCU.
Jenerie O'Sullivan from Co-op Radio in Vancouver brings us the next feature from the Save Crab Park rally held on June 11th. The rally was called in opposition to a port expansion in Vancouver. Activists say this park provides downtown Eastside residents with a small piece of green space with a natural view of the water. The expansion of the port threatens to transform the park's natural setting into a heavy industrial zone.
We get Diganmanuk Gubba Wilson, honored guest, matriarch, advocate, allies. Thank you, Creator, for keeping the rain away so we could gather. Thank you for taking the time to come out and fight for Crab Park. I'm going to keep my remarks brief but simple. You got to fight for those small little pieces and parcels of land that are important to our community, that are important to our backyard. When I think about advocacy, I think about transparency, I think about integrity, I think about consulting with the people beforehand. I think about the Silvertine decision and the importance of Aboriginal rights and title and free, prior, and informed consent. When we talk about developing on our shores and we think about the air, the water, and the land. So I'm just here in solidarity with the people.
That's exciting. Got to hear a little bit of the Niska language from Melanie Mark. She is the MLA here in Vancouver, and she was at the rally for Crab Park. It happened on June the 11th. And we now have Don Larson on the telephone. He is one of the people that sat in at Crab Park in a tent, along with a few others, in order to secure the park itself. And now the park is at threat because of the Vancouver port expansion. He opposes it. Melanie Mark does, and so does Jenny Quorum. But first, here's Don Larson. Can you share with the listeners of Snoyles what some of your concerns are about the expansion?
One of my main concerns is the hazardous cargo, the dangerous goods that is down on the central waterfront and all along the rail tracks to the east of Vancouver, right down and all the way back to Canada Place. And the Centerm pier extension proposal by the Port of Vancouver Corporation and DP World Sultan of Dubai, international shipping company, will bring in undoubtedly more unknown kinds and amounts of dangerous goods by containers, by truck, by rail. And I think that's unacceptable. They've been lucky so far. There's never been a real accident down there. There was a mini accident a year ago where 12 people went to hospital from chlorine poisoning from a container on fire at the very same Centerm pier at the foot of Main that is wanting to expand their facility by two-thirds.
Here is Jenny Kwan, a pre-recording of her at the Save Crab Park rally.
There is much work ahead of us, and we want to demand accountability. I will say that again. We want to demand accountability from the port. We want the port to hear us loud and clear in this community. We do not want to see this expansion. The port should not have the authority to assess and approve their own projects. They need to be accountable to the community, they need to speak with the community, and they need to have social license for the projects that they want to proceed with. Melanie mentioned about it, and I didn't sort of go on about it in my earlier speech, but I was astounded when I went back to look at the Water Marine Act, which is the act that governs this port, and also the Environmental Assessment Act. And when I looked at the Environmental Assessment Act, while it is sort of brief notation of Aboriginal rights and recognition, in that same act, there is no mandatory requirement for the agency, and in this instance, that would be the port, to engage with the Aboriginal community. I'm going to tell you, when I looked at that act, and I thought to myself, so well, then that's the waste of ink. On this, on the one hand, they want to say that they acknowledge Aboriginal rights, and on the other hand, there is no requirement that they shall engage with Aboriginal peoples. And so, in any event, what we want to see is change. And this government has promised Canadians from coast to coast to coast that there would be a new nation-to-nation relationship with the First Peoples. So this will be one initiative where we want to demand to see action from this government. We need to ensure that the environmental assessment process is restored. It has been gutted by the Harper government. The Liberal government did say that they would fix that, but they have not so far. And so far it remains the same. And any environmental assessment process will still be under the Harper process, and that too needs to change. But under no circumstances should the port be allowed to do their own assessment and approve their own projects. That is not accountability.
That's it for our features.
Now it's time for our community radio report. The annual National Campus and Community Radio Conference took place on Algonquin Territory in Ottawa, hosted by CHUO from June 6th to the 11th of 2016. First Nations delegates and delegates of color shared their experiences of participating in the conference and the importance of the community radio to themselves and their communities.
Each year in June, the National Campus and Community Radio Association, the NCRA, holds a conference bringing together people from campus and community radio stations across Canada. In the past, the conference has tried to deal with issues of representation and equity at the conference and on the NCRA's board of directors. In 2015, a motion to add 2 equity seats to the NCRA's board of directors for people of color and people with disabilities was defeated, but the board was mandated to review the election bylaws. In April, NCRA President Johnny Regalado informed members that the board would not be bringing a bylaw amendment to this year's conference to include equity seats on the NCRA board, but would instead create opportunities for underrepresented people to attend the conference. This year, the NCRA offered travel subsidies to the conference for people in financial need, taking into account people who are racialized, disabled, and Indigenous. Om Selma Rahamthullah spoke with self-identified First Nations people and people of color about their experiences participating in community radio and the importance of access to spaces such as the National Conference.
I'm here with Chris from Winnipeg. You want to introduce yourself?
Hi, my name's Chris Reed. I'm with CQW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg, and I'm Anishinaabe from registered to Rolling River First Nations, Manitoba. I'm part of Treaty 4 and currently serve as a community rep on the board of directors at CKW and also the board treasurer. And right now I'm working on a special series called The Daniels Decision. It should be available for upload on podcast on CKW.ca. My series is called The Daniels Decision, and it's a 4-part series. It's going to be about the portrait of Harry Daniels, the case itself, and then personal reflections. And the last part is going to be about the implications of this recent Supreme Court ruling in favor of the Daniels case.
So in terms of coming to the NCRC, why did you feel that it was important to be here, to be in Ottawa? You've come a long way.
Well, it was important for me is, when I come to think of it, like, I don't have too many privileges, and I've been marginalized so long just as a Native person, especially in Winnipeg. I mean, there's certainly a lot of challenges living in that city, being its largest First Nations population. Community radio has helped me out tremendously, both personally and professionally, and it's actually helped me to be a catharsis to do some healing for myself and to find out who I am. And encouraging the staff at CKW encouraging me to own my own culture and be supportive. And plus, I made some great friends.
So can I ask you guys, why did you come to the NCRC?
I became involved with my board at my local station like 2 months ago. And when they hired me on as a sponsorship coordinator, it became part of the job. So honestly, when I was like thinking about coming to this, I was kind of like, all right, this is like another thing we got to do, because you have how conferences usually are. But I'm actually walking away with it being like, I'm happy I came, and I now actually kind of have a fire for radio, which I did not previously. This is like my first time being on a mic in like 6 months, so that's how much involved I am with radio usually.
Well, I kind of do a lot at the radio station. I host the show, and I also serve on the board of directors, as well as participate in many volunteering activities. And I just thought this would be a great place to network, get to meet great people as yourself, and, you know, get to learn stuff.
So I came to the NCRC because I'm very new to the radio industry and to campus and community radio, and I thought this would be an amazing learning opportunity, and it really has been. So I'm so glad that I came here, and I've learned so much about how radio can address local issues of diversity and how important community radio is to have in each community. So I think it's been a great experience.
I came to NCRC because I loved being involved at CKXU. Shout out to everyone at the CKXU crew, past, present, and future. And I love doing production stuff there, and I just had a ball, and I heard about NCRC, and as an Indigenous individual, Indigenous youth to be more specific, I heard of opportunities to go to NCRC, so I wanted to do a two-pronged attack of going to NCRC as a very interested in production, wanting to get all kinds of involved with every aspect of audio engineering, yeah, but also be an Indigenous representative, be an Indigenous youth. So hey, I mean, Indigenous audio engineering, hey, that's a future coming soon.
We're here with one of the award winners. Tell us about the award you won.
So I won an award for Femme Radio, which is a CJRU feminist collective. I host the show with Emily Javowski, Stacey Copeland, and Gabby Shavowski. So Femme Radio is really a feminist collective, and we talk about issues relating to women and individuals who identify as women. We try to highlight Canadian content, whether that be an artist, what we're digging, news stories, all related to women of diversity. This is my first NCRC, and not only that, it's my first year in community radio. So this is like so crazy to me. It's amazing.
And why did you come to the NCRC? Why did you think it's important, and what have you gotten from it so far?
I came to NCRC because I wanted to learn more. It's my first year, and my background is in political science, and I feel like I don't know enough about radio, and I have this huge passion for social justice issues. And naturally, I gravitated towards community radio.
For Groundwire, this is Saima Asid reporting from the National Campus and Community Radio Conference in Ottawa on unceded and unsurrendered Algonquin territory.
That's it for this edition of Groundwire, produced at the National Campus and Community Radio Conference.
Music this week was by A Tribe Called Red.
Headlines this week were written by Ugona Chibo, Saima Asad, Chanel Klein, and Om Sama Rahim Tula.
We also thank Jinnery O'Sullivan, Audrey O'Braham, Carly Forbes, and CHUO.
Tune in again to hear Groundwire on your local community radio station. Download at groundwirenews.ca or podcast from rabble.ca.